You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey, this is Joe. Just wanted to say a couple of things before the podcast starts. One, our audio quality is a little weird, and I don't know what I did. It's not terrible, just weird. And two, we recorded this podcast the night that it was announced that Tony Selby had passed away, the actor who plays Glitz. We recorded it that day, and then later it was revealed, just kidding, he's fine. It was a different Tony Selby. So when we say that guy is dead, he totally isn't. Anyway, enjoy the podcast. He's totally fine.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
You always say it, and it's always true.
Today we're going to be talking about the first serial of the 23rd season of Doctor Who, The Trial of a Time Lord, Part 1, The Mysterious Planet, which consists of four episodes that aired from September 6th, 1986 to September 27th, 1986.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net. Speaking of Matt and our friends, and friends of Matt, we have a returning guest today. I'm pretty sure the last episode he was on was with Matt.
Was with Matt, I think you're right.
So it's R. Allen Seiler. Welcome back.
Yay.
Hi, guys. How are ya?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's always a joy to see you. You, plural, not just you, Joe, but both of you. Both of you.
You're kind of disappointed now? You looked a little sad.
A little, yeah.
I mean, it's always a joy to see both of you individually and together.
There we go. Nailed it.
Woo!
So, what have you been up to since last we heard from you? I don't even remember when the last we heard from you was. I'm so terrible with time.
Time is so meaningless now.
It really is.
Let's see. It was when we did The Awakening, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, that was like two seasons ago.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Feels like 2,000 years ago.
I mean, we had a whole, like, world-changing pandemic in that amount of time. What have I been up to? Holy cow. You know, just sitting around.
I don't believe that for a second.
Right. God, in that amount of time, I did two virtual Wholantas. I've been developing my little publishing company. I'm in two bands, which is ridiculous. And so, you know, just stuff, you know, just work.
And you've got a podcast now, too.
Oh, my gosh, a Star Trek podcast, Earth Station Trek.
Part of the ESO Network. Now you're not only a guest of the podcast, you're like part of the network.
Exactly.
How's that been treating you?
Oh, man, the podcast is so fun. We have such a good time doing it. I've really, really, really enjoyed it. And I wasn't sure that I'd be able to commit to like a weekly recording, you know, but it has been so much fun that I like look forward to it each week. So at least for now, it's going well.
What's the like format of it? Is it like this where you're going through them in order or are you doing something different?
Nope, we do a different topic every week. Now we will be doing this when Paramount Plus starts showing new episodes, whenever the next batch of episodes kicks up, which should be, I think, in August. So we'll be doing episode reviews the night of the episode airing, which has been Thursday historically. So Thursday night, we're going to do our recording after the episode is over, and then the episode will go out on Monday. But until then, we're just doing whatever topic comes to mind.
Very cool.
Cool.
I know nothing about Star Trek. I'm pretty sure there's a Spock on it. That's all I know.
That was. I think it might still be on our Patreon as a stretch goal.
Yeah, that we would do the Watchathon of Khan.
That has to be done. I mean, you should take a little break at least after the massive undertaking that is watching all the way through Doctor Who before you start another equally massive task of watching every minute of Star Trek. That's huge.
Well, Joe's also currently watching every...
Oh, I know.
Every comic book media ever made.
Dude, yeah. Are you insane?
Yes, I really am.
When you said that, I was like, how?
I mean, I don't think it's physically possible, but I'm going to try.
Well, it's ambitious and
I haven't regretted it until I watched Top Hair again, and that's terrible. I started to regret it when I watched the first Batman and it was very racist, but Top right. Harrigan is just boring. There was one episode, because I'm watching them wherever I can find them. Because some of them are like out of, they're like, you can't even like buy them anywhere. And so like Hop Harrigan was like uploaded to Daily Motion, and one episode was just uploaded bad. So it was just glitchy. You couldn't see anything. And it was just as enjoyable as the rest of the serial. So.
Wow.
But let's talk about something good. Let's talk about Doctor Who.
All right.
That sounds fine to me.
Specifically,
I wasn't doing anything.
Specifically, let's talk about the Trial of a Time Lord, episode one of part one, The Mysterious Planet. The Mysterious Planet, episode one. I'm saying one so many times, which I have titled
The Episode One.
No, that's your title.
One, episode one, the first one.
Yeah.
The first one.
I've titled it The Watchathon of Ravelox.
Okay.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah, keeping it on brand.
Well done.
Thank you. It works on two levels because it's like, that's our podcast.
In case we weren't picking up on that.
It's also the planet and they're watching it.
Uh-huh.
Right.
On screen.
Uh-huh. Right. Ooh, it's so meta.
This serial is kind of meta.
It really is.
At least
it is, yeah.
At least the sort of wraparound stuff is meta. Was this story created with the sort of wraparound in mind, or was that like an afterthought?
It was, actually. So back in 1985, when the previous season was ending, they were already in pre-production on the next season when they got the order that Doctor Who was going to get canceled. And that sort of got like changed to, oh, no, you're not really canceled. You're just on a hiatus. So the previous season, since it had gone out like January through March or April of 85, as they were getting to the point where they're going to start making the next season, which would have been January of 86, they had to pull the plug on everything. The other thing that happened was that when they did announce that Doctor Who was going to be coming back, they reduced it from a normal 26 episodes per season to 14 episodes. So they decided, well, they had stories commissioned. They had, I mean, there were going to be stories about Ice Warriors and Autons, and the Ronnie was going to come back, and it was crazy amount of stuff that they were going to do, but it sounded phenomenal.
They were going to go to Blackpool, I know, because the cliffhanger.
They almost said it.
Almost said it.
Boom.
So then when they got reduced to 14 episodes, they decided to make something special out of it and to sort of tie four stories together into one big story arc. I mean, the only time that Doctor Who ever really did that before was The Key to Time, but that was more loosely structured than this is. So, yeah, I mean, it was originally not the plan, but then when plans changed, they made it the plan.
And I watched the making of, and I wasn't sure about if it was like written for this, but I guess it is. But I do know, like, there was also the idea of doing this trial because the show itself was kind of on trial.
Which Colin Baker says he protested at the time, saying, this is not a good idea, you guys. We should not be advertising the fact that our show is in trouble.
And then sort of pointing out the problems with it, in a way, almost.
Right.
Like the things that are said about it.
And there's, interestingly, that's going to come up again a few seasons later in a Sylvester McCoy story, where they really sort of like play on the fact that Doctor Who is not as popular or as stable as it once was. It's very fun. It's a lot of fun. You'll see.
I always enjoy when it's like, I mean, we had like the meta episode last season, too, as well, the Vengeance on Varus, which had the greatest cliffhanger of all time.
I know, isn't it great? Love it.
And cut.
I love when Doctor Who gets meta.
We have a new theme song.
We have a new theme song.
We do. So I want to take a moment just to give a shout out to my friend, Dominic Glenn. He had been sort of petitioning to get on with the BBC, specifically to get on with Doctor Who. And so John Nathan Turner called him and said, hey, would you like to do the first story of the new season? Which, of course, he said yes. And as he's working on the music for the serial, John Nathan Turner calls him and says, you know what? would you also like to do the new theme song arrangement? So he's a brand, I mean, this, he's brand new in his career. He's not done anything on this level before. And he's not only asked to score Doctor Who, but to create a new theme song for it, which is insane. And I think it's really cool because when the episode starts, this is one of the very few times that a brand new composer gets this much exposure at the beginning of an episode. He gets the opening credits. And then, like, the first minute and a half of the episode, where the big model shot of the space station and everything is all him with that. It's just an amazing score. It's so gorgeous.
It is.
I think Christine said this is her favorite version of this the theme.
I love it, too. It's very modern, but it also sort of harks back to that mysterious, you know, sort of like, you know, the original Hartnell kind of like, it gives you that sense of foreboding and you don't really know what's going to happen next. Yeah, I love it.
And they only use it for this season,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's kind of sad. I mean, I guess it helps it stand out, but do they go back to the previous one or do they move to a new one?
A new one. So Sylvester McCoy gets his own theme.
I really enjoyed this one, though. It's very good. And like you said, leading into that, the next bit of music is also incredibly great. It's like very orchestral and choir-y.
Yeah. Yeah, with big, so like, church organ and chimes. And, oh, it's gorgeous. I absolutely love it.
Can we talk about that model shot, though?
We have to.
Oh, my it's God.
It's the best looking thing that's been on Doctor Who,
that I've ever seen in this entire show.
It is, not coincidentally, the most expensive special effects shot in the entirety of Classic Who.
Looks amazing.
Be like on the ropes as a TV show and then go, we're going to do the most expensive thing we've ever done. Is everyone cool with that?
Well, they weren't cool with that. But John Nathan Turner said, okay, but here's the thing. This is the first thing that viewers are going to see after us being off the air for a year and a half. And we can justify the cost because we're going to use, you know, footage from that model shot throughout the whole 14 episodes. So we're basically spreading the cost over the entire season.
Did they use shots of it again?
They did.
Okay. But also, this is the last, in Classic Who, this is the last thing ever shot on film.
You watched the, like, the commentary and you were...
Or what's the making of?
Yeah, who was telling me. How did they do it?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought you were the one who was telling me that. Never mind.
It was the first use of a computerized motion control camera. So it's a like a mini camera that's mounted up on a computer controlled arm thing that moves this little camera around the model. It's really neat.
Was it like a chroma key for the background, or was there actually something there for the stars and stuff?
I don't know. And I know I should know because I know I've seen photographs of the model being filmed. It seems like it's got to be something digital and not something like a drape or anything like that behind them. Because of the way when the camera moves and the stars spin behind it, you know?
Yeah, it looks so cool.
Man, it's fantastic.
It looks so rad. It's a bummer that it's the last thing shot on film. But what a shot to go out on, I guess.
Yeah, totally, totally.
Now they moved to video for outdoor scenes. I forget what kind. I remember reading about it. You can sort of tell.
Yeah, I'm impressed. So it's called OB, which is outdoor broadcast. The BBC had been sort of like encouraging shows to move to OB cameras for location work because it was supposedly cheaper than doing film. And then you can mix it with your studio footage too. John Nathan Turner had wanted to do that ever since Peter Davison. The directors who were working on the show said, no, we must do location on film.
On film does look better, but it is more consistent when it's all video. It's less jarring.
Yeah, exactly. You can do your shot mixing a lot better because, and it was always funny, you know, when you watch Pertwee's or Tom Baker's and they're like on location and they walk up to a door and then in the next shot, the door opens and they're in a video studio and you're like, well, how did that happen? So yeah, I mean, this does make it a lot more consistent as far in terms of like the appearance.
We do see this last film shot. It's we see the TARDIS being pulled into a big beam of light, which looks very cool. And then we're back in video inside. Is this Gallifrey? What is this?
It's a space station that we assume is like maybe orbiting Gallifrey, but it doesn't really say. So it's a Time Lord station, wherever.
This
I'd hate to get jury duty and have to like, I gotta fly out to the space station.
This opening is really jarring to me because it's just the Doctor alone. And at some point he's like, wait, where's Perry? And I was like, yeah, that's an excellent question. I have a lot of questions, actually, because it seems like we just go ahead and start this in like a different place than where we left.
He's on trial. That's the name of this thing. He's on trial. There's some Time Lords there, headed up by...
God, I love a good Time Lord.
The Inquisitor and the Valyard.
Valyard. The Valyard.
I've heard so much about this dude.
I have too.
The new series viewers kept saying anytime there was a villain on, it was either going to be the Valyard or if it was a female character, oh, I bet it's the Rani. And it's never either one of them.
When I write for Doctor Who... which is going to happen in the future.
Sure.
I'll make a character that's just both.
There you go. I mean, I know this is spoilers, I guess, but spoilers for those of you who are keeping along with us, and if you haven't somehow heard this, the Valyard is the Doctor, supposedly, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, you'll find out in a few episodes' time.
I'm wondering how that works.
Oh, don't expect any kind of really detailed explanation or anything like that.
Oh, okay.
It's basically a line of dialogue that informs you of this and gives you sort of an explanation, but, you know, there's not going to be a flashback of his creation or anything like that.
Interesting. I'm waiting for Chibnall to make it make sense, because... that seems like what
he's
he wants to do.
He's very invested in that, yeah.
So, have you seen the videos of Chibnall when he was a kid?
Yes.
Where he goes on the TV show and just tells the people who were writing for and running Doctor Who what a shitty job they do?
Yeah. And now people are doing that too.
I mean, it comes around, buddy. I mean, and you know he is like, oh God, why did I ever say that shit? Because now it's going to get played forever. It'll be at my funeral. But yeah, what a snot-nosed little asshole he was.
Was.
Yeah. Come on. I'm being fair now. Come on.
I don't know. I mean, he may be a nice enough guy now.
He may be.
I've never met him.
His show's not great.
But you can't speak to what he is like as a person. You don't
right.
know.
Right. I can only speak to who he is as a writer, which is not the best. So... they're like, we're going to interrogate you and stuff and show that you're a bad guy.
And we're going to do that by playing an episode of Doctor Who.
Right.
Also, we learned, because he also, like, tries to plead president. And, like, I'm president. You can't do anything to me. And they're like, you've been gone so long. You've been deposed.
Which, by the way, doesn't feel great in today's world. Can't prosecute me. I'm president.
Yeah.
Nothing I can do is illegal.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel good.
No.
It meant something a lot different when the Doctor said it in 86 than when maybe a year or so ago similar things were said.
Doctor Who, always relevant. So yes, we tune in to the Watchathon of Ravelox. That's what we're going to watch. The Doctor and Perry are walking through a rain-soaked forest. The Doctor has an umbrella. Perry looks great.
Isn't that outfit fantastic?
This wow, outfit is great. Amazing. It's the first one that looks good on her.
It looks like, comfortable.
Looks comfortable.
Exactly. Yeah. Although I'm not sure about the shoes in walking along that soggy ground. But, you know, that's okay because the rest of it looks fantastic.
I was having flashbacks to my sister's wedding because it rained on her wedding and we were all like in heels, like walking across grass to take wedding pictures. And you're just like, I'm stuck. I'm in the grass. I cannot move.
And not only is, like, Perry cute, they're cute.
Their banter works for the first time ever.
Yes, exactly. I remember, you know, back in the 80s, I was watching Doctor Who on PBS. And, you know, you would get a new season and then they would finish the season and then they would double back to the beginning of Tom Baker again. And then you finally get up to where, you know, like Peter Davison's second season. Oh, my God, I finally get to see the 20th, you know, and then it doubles back to the beginning of Tom Baker again. So it took forever to get like all the way up to trial. Watching that first scene of them walking through the woods and, you know, all that stuff. And I was like, oh my God, I was blown away by how chummy, how sweet they were with each other, how it wasn't confrontational and argumentative and bitchy. And I was like, oh my God, this is so wonderful.
It wasn't borderline abusive.
It was not. No, it was like, you know, she wasn't like, you know, any kind of like, you know, victim of some kind of syndrome where she like, you know, loves her captive or anything. But oh my God, it was like, it was so nice. And they say that they insisted to John Nathan Turner, we are tired of the bitchy. We're not doing bitchy this year. And they got the first script and they're like, God damn it, it's bitchy. And so they played the bitchy totally against type, where they just turned it into playful banter rather than them sniping at each other, which I thought was brilliant. And it just makes you want to watch them. You know, it makes you believe that she's with him because they like each other and not because, you know, she's stuck there or whatever. It's so much better.
Traumatized and can't leave.
Bantering, not bickering.
That's... Imagine if we had that. Imagine if we had a whole season of that relationship.
I mean, and it also doesn't help the terrible accent. I feel like she's getting better at it.
Oh, sure.
Maybe.
She settled into something that she's comfortable with. I don't know if I would say that she has gotten better at the accent.
It might be that I'm just...
You have grown accustomed to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear that they were kind of like, this is bad.
Yeah.
We won't do it anymore.
Because they're like, this isn't how we are with each other, personally. Why do we want our characters to be like this, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's not fun to watch.
The doctor does like a little test thing with her, and just to see if she catches on to things, and she does, and he's very proud of her. Because Perry's a botanist.
I didn't know I was going to have to take this back so fast and so many times.
Yeah, because you're like, how much you want to bet they don't bring
they
that back up?
They never bring that back up again. It came out of nowhere and it's never going to come back again. And this is like the third time where they've been like, Perry's a botanist. And it's like, okay, you got me.
I know.
Because this planet, which is remarkably like Earth, supposed to have been destroyed by a fireball, but everything looks pretty much okay. And that's why when Perry's botany skills come in handy and she notices this stuff. While she's noticing this stuff, they are being noticed. Nice segue. by a couple of fellas named Glitz and Dibber.
Sabalam Glitz.
I don't know Dibber's full name.
This is, by the way, I think I've talked on this podcast before about a webcomic called The Ten Doctors.
Yes.
And like watching this, I was like, oh, huge chunks of The Ten Doctors takes place like in or around the trial of the Time Lord. Yeah.
Yeah, The Ten Doctors is so good. Fantastic.
For some reason, I decided that would be the best way for me to get like a handle on all the classic Doctors without watching all of it. And so I actually read The Ten Doctors like as somebody who had only seen New Who.
That's awesome.
But it's been weird, like, you know, we'll get to stuff like this, and I'll be like, oh, that's Glitz. I actually know Glitz.
I believe Glitz does come back a couple of times as well, so.
Really?
This is not his only appearance. And I will say this is the, I guess, the last-ish appearance of a Holmes duo, because this is written by Robert Holmes. And this is, he is known for his comic duos. And this is potentially, that's what, because this is his last script, because he...
His last completed script. There is one more to come. Which he was working on when he died, yeah.
And speaking of
death,
the actor who plays Sabalam Glitz passed away today.
Today.
That's
crazy. What a terrible coincidence.
Yeah.
It really is.
He's totally fine.
Well, you'll see in the next couple of appearances that he makes, particularly the one in Sylvester McCoy's first season, there is a setup there that I would have put down all kinds of money for Big Finish to have picked up. There was a Big Finish series just wait. It was like it was handed to him. But apparently, Tony Selby just didn't want to do it. They had asked Tony Selby to do Big Finish, and that he just never wanted to do it. Which I think is so sad, because he is such a good actor, and he has such a... The character is so good, and he has such a distinctive and expressive voice. I think he would have been a shoe-in, just a perfect character for audio.
The first scene with the two of them is so good. It's just them casually discussing, like, psychology and prison therapists.
And it's neat the way that they sort of reveal. You know, you don't know who they are or where they come from, but you know, they're having their little chat, and Glitz just throws in, you know, that's the trouble with prison psychologists. And that's how you find out that they're, you know, prisoners or escapees or something. And I just thought that was so clever. It was so nicely done.
And then there's like an even further reveal where he basically says that he killed him, right?
Right. Of course, I had Justin tried to kill him. Man, it's good writing.
And then they discuss whether or not to kill the Doctor and Perry. They miss out on that because the Doctor ducks under something or something, and they're like, ah, we missed our shot. So, but they also want to deactivate a beam that powers a robot. I, at this point in time, I had no idea what they were talking about.
I don't think you're supposed to. So.
No, yeah. So
the serial does kind of throw you into things.
And that's what I love is that this story, you're really just thrown right in the middle of it. There's no introduction to these things. There's no setup. You just have to watch as things unfold and kind of catch on as you go. And I love it. I think it's so well done.
If I had been one of the Time Lords in the you know, trial, I'd been like, hold on, what?
Right.
I'm supposed to be judging this thing. What's happening?
Who are these people? This is about the Doctor.
I will say some of this doesn't always connect very well to the trial plot line necessarily.
I do like that. Occasionally the Doctor will point that out. He'll be like, first of all, I'm not even in this scene. Where did you even get this footage?
But you know, that's the funny thing is that the Sixth Doctor is one who is so self-centered that you would see him complaining, why are you showing me footage that I'm not in?
It's like commentary on the serial almost.
Exactly.
It's so good.
It's like they're doing their own podcast.
The Doctor and Perry make their way into this like ruined building, and the Doctor makes one of the best jokes I've heard on Doctor Who, where he's like, I love this planet. I might write a thesis on it. Ancient Life on Ravalox by Doctor, and then he gets interrupted by Perry.
Yes, I love it.
I legitimately got excited for like a half second, like he was gonna say something. I was like, whoa! Oh,
it's a joke.
And then I laughed very hard because that's a good joke. It's fine, he was just gonna say who.
Of course he was. He absolutely was. That's my favorite bit in, what's the name of the episode? With Missy?
Yeah, where she says he calls himself Doctor Who.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's not your name. I like it. My name's Doctor Who.
Then there's a scene of Glitz and Dibber throwing a flash grenade at some villagers. Glitz says, I hate saying this, but take me to your leader, which I enjoy that because usually when you use a cliche like that, it's usually, I've always wanted to say this. But he does the opposite. He's like, I hate saying this. But the Doctor and Perry discover that this destroyed building is an Earth building. They see a sign that says Marble Arch, which I guess is a famous place. I don't know places.
It's one of the stations on the London Underground.
Ah.
There you go. And then I guess they're like, is this Earth? And that never fully gets answered what's up with this. I assume it's going to be maybe in a future serial or...
You'll see.
Okay.
You'll see.
It reminded me of a lot, even though, you know, this technically came first. It reminded me of the recent Doctor Who episode where a similar thing happens and they find like a sign that's like, oh, this is Earth.
Orphan 55?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Where they're in the tunnels or whatever. I guess it was when they see the Russian writing or whatever. And they're like, holy smokes, this is actually Earth.
Oh my God, it was Earth all along.
It was Earth all along.
And this whole planet's full of apes.
That is funny because the first time I saw that one, I did think of this. I was like, come on, it's Ravalox. We all know. That Russian writing just says Ravalox in Russian.
Or something about Canadian geese.
Or something, right?
Then we do get a little bit of a scene that has been happening. Perry is overwhelmed, doesn't want to go on adventures anymore. But the Doctor isn't a jerk about it this time, which is nice.
Because there's that really, really sweet moment. That really lovely moment where he says the thing about, you know, stars perish and you know, things change and nothing can be eternal. And it's so sweet. You know, in the modern era, people always talk about the Doctor and their speeches, you know, like the 11th Doctor at Stonehenge and all that stuff. And there's three great Sixth Doctor moments in this season. Two of them are in this story. That's the first one. And it's a small little thing, but it's such a different dynamic in their relationship.
Right.
It's almost like Two and Victoria in that Cyberman episode.
Exact. In the Tomb of the Cyberman. That's exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what it reminds me of as well.
He's comforting and it's nice.
And not being a bombastic jerk.
Which he can be a bombastic jerk sometimes, but
oh sure,
just not all the time, please.
Right. Let's have some levels in our dynamic. But yeah, I love that moment a lot.
It's very good. And then he tells her to be careful and then leaves. And then she trips over something and he runs back and is like, I said, be careful. It's very cute. But he leaves, and then she gets grabbed by some villagers. Glitz and Dibber, meanwhile, are taken to... I don't know how to pronounce her name. Katrika?
Oh, Katrika. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Queen Katrika.
Nailed it. She's great. I love her.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Oh, I love her.
The second I saw her, I was like, I'm going to love this character.
And she gets some good lines later in the story, too.
She looks good carrying a big, like, automatic weapon.
Also just clearly having fun the whole time, which is always good to watch.
It's funny, though, because Joan Sim, the lady who plays her, did not like Dean Doctor Who.
Really?
She did not enjoy it. But you can't tell because she sells it so well.
Yeah, she's eating some scenery sometimes.
I'm telling you. Good stuff.
The Doctor wanders around and grabs a jar of water and is immediately surrounded by people.
Guards.
Guards, there you go. Blanking on words today.
People who are doing things.
They're people like, who are guarding.
You're a water thief, and we got to catch you because you stole our water, because water is precious here. Even though we earlier saw that it was raining a lot, this will be important.
Yes.
There's this other guy, Merdeen, who he's been on Doctor Who before, I believe, right?
He played Duggan in City of Death.
Yeah, the American cop. Punches things. I loved him. This role is not as good of a role, but it's fine.
It's okay. It's good.
He does what he needs to do. Not much else, but
yeah,
he is sent to call some, because they're like, there's new people down here that shouldn't be here. We need to do a culling. So he is sent to do that. And he is sent by a fantastic robot.
Yeah. Oh, man. This story has got two really, really greatly designed robots. But this one, particularly, is the best. It's like the best robot they've ever done on Doctor Who.
It looks like almost like a big bull head, almost. It's got like the horns. It is slightly like animatronic, a little bit, right? Like, I think the arms are controlled by someone, right?
No, it's an actor.
It's an actor? I thought the like hands and stuff were like...
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if he's controlling that from like levers on the inside of the arms, or... I don't know. I think it's all actor controlled.
I do know they specifically tried to make it look like an actor couldn't fit inside of it, even though an actor is inside of it.
That's a hard thing to do. I think that's more successful with the other robot that we see later, but this one is just such a good design.
It looks so cool. It's so big, fantastic, too.
And it's massive, and it's like very, really intimidating.
Christine said it's like, it also looks very top heavy, like it's going to fall over at any moment. Eventually it does. But she was like, I told you, it's top heavy. But this robot's name is Jethro, which I kept hearing Jethro.
Well, of course.
So we decided that its name is just Jethro.
Jethro.
Jethro the menacing robot.
Whose menace would be undermined if he ever said, golly, or whatever it was that Jethro used to say. I have no idea. I don't remember.
I can only remember stuff from the movie.
Ah, yeah. I never saw the movie. Was the robot in it?
Yeah.
I gotta watch it.
He's the one that finds the oil. Like, he shoots the ground.
Robot does.
Beverly Hillbillies, the movie, starring Jethro. That's a winning idea right there.
What's Smog? I reckon it is a small hog.
Oh, wow.
The only line I can remember that Jethro says.
That's pretty good.
Thank you. So, Glitz and Dibber. Yeah, I almost said Dimmer. Glitz and Dibber.
Well, he is a bit dimmer than the average bear.
Though he's also occasionally very smart, and I enjoy that.
Yeah.
He always gets, like, little good barbs in. They are talking to Katrika and are talking about how they need to operate on this big totem that they have, which is actually like a big electronic thing. They say it's some sort of thing that attracted the fireball. They're lying. But they said this is what attracted the fireball. We need to deactivate it. It's like sending out a signal and that's what we're here for. And she's like, you don't know how many people have come here and said different things. So we know you're lying. And then he pulls out a gun and they immediately grab his gun. They're like, they all brought guns too. So
so we're ready for you, Buster.
And they get basically taken prisoner. And then we meet Balazar. Balazar is one of the guards who has taken the Doctor for stealing water. He gives me very strong Dirk Gently vibes. The guy who plays Dirk Gently in the new Dirk Gently. Yeah.
Okay.
Samuel Barnett, is that his name?
That is.
Yep.
Yeah. He is the bookkeeper. He talks about how they have three
three whole books.
My favorite joke.
There is Moby Dick by Herman Melville, The Water Babies by Charles Kingsley, and my favorite, UK Habitats of the Canadian Goose by HM Stationery Office. These three religious epics.
Sacred text. I love it.
So good. He's all the time talking about those Canadian goose. Also, they're going to stone the doctor. And everybody is very excited about that. The doctor says he is not excited. I'm not excited. They're about to stone him, and he flings open his umbrella and blocks some of the rocks.
Most of the rocks, not all of them.
It is just an umbrella.
Exactly. And they are coming from a lot of different directions.
Still manages to bonk him in the noggin.
It was still a good idea.
It stopped him from dying. He got knocked out, but he didn't die. And then we cut to the doctor watching this and bragging about it.
It's my favorite thing because he looks so dumb. Like, he throws open the umbrella, it is semi-effective, and then he gets hit in the head with a rock and goes down. And he's like, did you see that?
Impressive.
Did you see the thing I did with the umbrella?
Aren't I the best?
That's great, right? No, we aren't watching the same episode.
Oh, but yeah, but he's watching it through the filter of his own ego.
And then the Valiant says, nobody's impressed. We all think you're the worst, and I'm going to prove it. If the court agrees with me, you're going to get terminated. And then we dramatically zoom in on the doctor's face.
And let me tell you, they do a lot of that across these 14 episodes where the cliffhanger is the camera doing a crash zoom into the doctor's face. We get it.
It happens twice in this serial, so
I think at least he's gotten better at making a face to zoom in on.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know if it's good, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And that's the end of episode one. We're into episode two, which I have called The Immortal L3.
I have one for this episode, and it's a throwback. I'm going to call it The Robots of Death.
Ah, nice.
That's the only one I have.
So, it's a good one.
Don't look for anything from this point on.
So this will be your second time discussing The Robots of Death.
Exactly.
So, Drathro wants to question the doctor, because they're like, we're just going to kill him. And he's like, no, I actually... He has, like, a microphone connection with, the guy whose name I already forgot.
Oh, Merdine.
Merdine, yeah. He has, like, a microphone connection with Merdine, and he's like, bring me the doctor. I want to have a bit of a chat with him. Meanwhile, Perry is brought to Katrika, and she is promised multiple husbands.
This is one of the best lines in the whole script, where she's like, you know, because we have few women, we have multiple husbands. And she says, it's much the same on Earth. We just have them one at a time. I love that.
I do like when she first says it and she's like, husbands? Plural? It's almost like she doesn't mind so much getting a husband.
Right.
It's just the fact that there's more than one that she's like, hold on a second. I was with you until you said that S.
I'd have taken just a random husband. I'm not doing anything.
I haven't gotten any in a while.
I've been hanging out with this guy in a rainbow coat for like a year. I don't get out much. It turns out nobody's actually seen Drathro on this planet. He keeps to himself. He makes his orders to that microphone. He watches people with boxes, which Balazar recognizes as cameras from his goose book. He's like, they use them to take pictures of geese. I just love this.
I love
this aspect. That he's like this learned man with all this knowledge, but it's from the three stupidest books.
The three sacred texts.
And they're like, well, Drathro will occasionally select some people to go to him, and they assume they get eaten. This whole dynamic, because they don't get eaten, we'll see who they are eventually. But this dynamic kind of reminded me a bit of Robert Holmes, I think it was his first story. Was that the Crotons?
It was, yeah, the first one. Yeah, this is definitely the same or similar premise.
Robot gets people.
And a lot of people criticized it for that. But this whole story is sort of like a Robert Holmes' greatest hits kind of thing where he takes like elements from, and this is the most obvious one, he takes elements from past things and things that work in his other stories, like the double act, the comedy double act, and it's all sort of put into this. So it's a great send-off for, even though he didn't know he was going to be dead pretty soon, it's a great send-off for him, I think. I really enjoy it.
Not to mention that this is also kind of similar to, he did the first Key to Time, right? That was, what was the name of that one?
Key to Time Part 1.
the Reboss Operation?
Yeah, the Reboss Operation, which he wrote that as well. So he gets to start both like season arcs that Doctor Who has done. Kind of cool. Then we do see the two servants of Jethro. They are these genius blondes.
They're so dumb. I love them so much.
This is another comic duo,
They're both dumb as dirt.
But they're geniuses.
They're both, and that's what makes them good.
And they have the wordiest dialogue of the entire 80s, I think.
It's a little hard to follow sometimes, but it's always funny.
Because it's always spoken kind of quietly and very fast. And you're like, I don't know what you're saying, but, you know, you're genius and blonde, so.
I know, I looked up the transcript, so.
You're like, oh, those are good jokes.
Those are good jokes, yeah. Their names are Tandril and Humker, which the Doctor
gets wrong a bit.
Refuses to know.
Yes, he calls them different things constantly. He'll also do this with the Valyard. He calls him Boatyard, Graveyard.
The Backyard, the Knacker's Yard. Yeah, it's good stuff.
From what I've heard, Colin Baker didn't enjoy those jokes. He thought they were kind of childish. But I'm like, eh, that's funny.
Yeah, oh, I agree.
But the two blonde servants, Tandril and Humker, they're introduced by just talking, because the Doctor's looking at the camera, and he's like, what's on the other end of this thing, you think? Is that Jethro? And then we see the servants, and they just proceed to elaborately discuss how ugly the Doctor is.
Sadly, we don't cut back to the trial for that.
That is true.
Yeah, that's the first time he's seen it, probably.
Yeah, he's like, wait a minute.
Right. Oh, that's a good point. That's hilarious. And I think it's funny, too, the way the Doctor sort of hams it up when he knows he's on camera. It reminds me so much of back in John Pertwee in a colony. Was it Colony in Space? No. It was in that season where he's like waving to the camera and he's just kind of being silly. And John Pertwee didn't do a lot of silly stuff. So it was such a cute moment for him.
I think that was the Sea Devils?
No. It was the Mind of Evil where they're going to the prison.
I knew the Master was in it, but I mean, he's in.
And the castle.
So then Jethro releases the second robot.
The L3, yeah.
Or is it the L7? I think it's the L7. Jethro's the L3, I think.
Oh, yeah.
It's like an iPhone situation, right?
Yeah.
Plus an L and a 7 make a better logo on the side of the robot than an L and a 3 do.
I think Jethro has a big 3 on his chest.
Yeah.
Almost looks like an 8. But the L3 is kind of reminds me of, the L7 kind of reminds me of the thing from Kenda, the robot, the like mecha suit and that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Pyramid-ish shaped. Hmm.
But it's cool that it's apparently not an actor. It's an actual working thing with treads, and it goes over, it turns corners all by itself. And I mean, does it really cool robot-y things?
I mean, yeah, it's like a really tall canine.
And just as reliable.
It's definitely a step up from Chameleon.
Poor Chameleon.
Oh, Chameleon's the best.
I still can't believe they didn't figure out how to use a shapeshifter.
Thank you.
Right? It's a robot and the prop is awful. It's not like you could just hire literally anyone.
Anyone. A different anyone for every story.
You can even paint them silver if you want to.
Come on, people. Let's think.
Use your noggin. Glitz and Dibber meet Perry, and they also discuss the husbands and gas. They want to gas the robot, I think is what their plan is, but they need to get out of there first. But Katrika says that Glitz is going to be burnt as a sacrifice. There's a bit where Dibber is like, it's so wasteful. Glitz is like, thinking he's talking about like their lives and stuff. He's like, no, using all that firewood, I would just, you know, shoot him in the back of the head and be done with it. It's way quicker.
I love these two because I think this is my own sort of headcanon. You see, they were in prison together. Clearly, one is the Dom and the other one is his bitch. So now they just go along on these space adventures and the Dom keeps his bitch around to do all the heavy carrying and lifting and stuff and to be the muscle while he's the, you know, quote unquote brains. The sad thing is that the couple of more times that, spoiler alert, that Glitz shows up, there's no Dibber.
Aww.
Oh, no.
I know. I hate to disappoint you with that, but, and we never know what happened to him, which is sad.
They broke up.
They did. They did. The death of romance is always so sad.
Oh, so the next scene is actually really fun. The doctor meets Drathro, and the blondes start checking the doctor's pockets. And that's always a good gag.
Always like, good. There's so much crap in there.
Yeah.
Pulling out masks and flashlights. Not just, like, long flashlights, you know?
Big old torches.
Just a whole bunch of different stuff, including a little package of jelly babies that he offers them.
Nice to see.
I don't know what the doctor and Drathro were talking about.
How old do you think those are? You think those are in there from the fourth doctor?
Yes.
My theory is he picked them up from the second doctor last season.
Oh.
So they're at least a season old.
Time Lord pockets probably have like some preservation tech.
That might even be where the doctor started eating jelly babies, was the second doctor in the two doctors, because he was very hungry that episode.
Oh, there you go.
But basically, Drathro is like, you're going to work with the blondes doing something. I don't even fully remember. Fix some stuff around.
He is running out of power, right? His power thing is broken.
He has to repair the black light system. Now, hang on a minute. Black light is not my area of expertise.
What do you think? I work in one of those, like, glow-in-the-dark bowling alleys?
Right. With my Jimi Hendrix poster on the wall.
What was it our friend Hallie was saying? They probably meant dark light. Is that it? Or something else, not
dark
black
matter.
Light. Dark matter, not but black
they,
light.
They talk about it like they're talking about dark matter a lot.
Because black light's the thing that makes your teeth glow.
Shouldn't make your teeth glow.
They're white, so they go, wah. Anything white glows, right?
Are they Ross from Friends?
Yes. Oh, no, wait, never mind. I take that back.
Wow.
I was just
don't
yes
agree to that.
I was yes-anding you, but no, I'm not Ross. The doctor also protests in the trial, and he says, look, I'm clearly working under duress here, so let me go. He's like a huge suck-up to the Inquisitor, just playing to her the whole time.
She's not having any of it.
Oh, no.
But he keeps trying.
She ain't falling for his mess.
Because the doctor's like, what's the deal with all the, like, water being sacred? There's plenty of water up there. And Drathro basically says he's been programmed to keep the underground going and, like, nothing should leave. So even though there's water above, it doesn't matter because everything outside of this place
is outside of his programming.
That's right.
Oh, the doctor calls the blondes humbug and handbag. And then he tells them, here, hold this. Here, hold this. Drathro, you hold this. And then he presses a button and electrocutes all of them.
And then I think this is the scene, the best thing in the entire season, when he runs out and the L7 sees him and he goes, that way! And the robot looks one way and he runs the other way. That is brilliant.
I can't believe it worked, but it did.
Right.
And then a very not great fight scene happens. Glitz, Dibber, and Perry overpower their guards by just shoving them a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's done. And Glitz gives Dibber a bomb, and he's like, go blow up the totem, the big antenna thing. And so he heads off to do that while Perry and Glitz are going to go sort of towards where the doctor is, that sort of underground area. And then also, Katrika's men are sort of sent after them once it's found out that they've kind of escaped from their very poor guards. Katrika's men are going after the escaped prisoners, while Drathro's men are sent after the doctor, who's also escaped. So there's a lot of escaping going on right now. Then we find out that Merdeen actually is sort of revolting against Drathro. He doesn't actually believe anything Drathro says, and he's the people he's been culling. He's actually just been, like, sending them up to the surface. Yeah, he's like,
which to me is, I mean, this isn't a Robert Holmes thing, but it's very similar also to Invasion of Time, when they're sending people out into the wasteland with the Shobogans, you know, outside the Citadel of Gallifrey.
Yeah, and there's just, like, a little community there now. He tells Balazar all this, that, like, all of this is bullshit, and everything up there is fine. And another guard, his name's Grail, overhears this. And this is sort of a little mini plot arc, is Grail knows that Merdeen is betraying Drathro. Dibber blows up the totem. The doctor meets Merdeen and Balazar and then almost runs away from him because, like, last time you tried to stone me. And they're like, no, we're good now. And he's like, oh, okay. And then he runs off with Balazar to do stuff to get out of there. And then it's the doctor, Balazar, Perry, Glitz, and Dibber all sort of wind up in that marble arch area and are surrounded on all sides by various villagers and the L7 and all that stuff. And the doctor's like, uh-oh, I think this may be the end. And that is the cliffhanger, even though we know the doctor's watching this from the future.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's the end of episode 2. We're now into episode 3, which I've called the of.
Very nice.
How did you do that?
That's amazing.
Like to know. Yeah. It took a lot of vocal training.
So are we in the Matrix?
Could be.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what that Keanu Reeves movie told me. So we're all in the Matrix.
Keanu Reeves movie. Unknown name.
Yeah. I think it was called Johnny Mnemonic. Balazar recognizes one of the villagers. His name is Broken Tooth.
Everybody has a name except that guy.
Broken Tooth looks a bit like the lion thing from, what was the serial we did with you? The Fourth Doctor one. With the lion people.
You're talking about Warrior's Gate.
Warrior's Gate, yeah. Broken
did
Tooth.
Did I do that with you?
I think you did. I want to say that you did.
Okay.
Did you?
Maybe.
I feel like that's one you
it's
did.
It's one that I really love, so I may have done. I don't know. I don't remember.
I think it was you and Matt.
That was so many seasons ago.
Yep, you were on Warrior's Gate.
Nice.
You and Matt. Yep.
I love doing your show with Matt.
Balazar's like, Broken Tooth, it's me. Don't shoot me. So he's like, okay. And he's like, shoot the robot. So he shoots the robot, and Dibber's like, squeeze, don't pull. He's just all the time critiquing how things are being done. He always has a little bit of advice. It's good. And it's always like when things are going bad, and they're like, get down. People are shooting at you. Then the doctor learns that the totem has been destroyed, and he is very upset about this. Because he's like, that's actually a problem. You've broken this thing and it's a problem.
It's bad in a blowy up kind of way.
Yeah, everything's going to explode. He's like, I need to fix it. But he's like, but he can't because they need to, the villagers like, we're taking you to Katrika. Then we do a brief cutaway to like the trial where they're like, oh boy, that whole shootout was very violent. We can't have violence on Doctor Who. why did we need to watch that? Why do we got to put that in this program? This is a family show.
This offends my delicate sensibilities.
And the Valiard's like, it's very important because it's cool. I may be paraphrasing here.
Only slightly. You've got the gist of it.
Yeah, but it is very clearly the show talking about violence on Doctor Who, which I think is brilliant. I love it. The blondes manage to reactivate the L7 and then argue about over which one of them did it. And Drathro is like, it doesn't matter. It's just on. Leave it alone. You two are driving me crazy.
Don't make me separate you two.
The doctor does talk to Katrika and says, oh, I want to repair that antenna thing. And she's like, why is everybody so obsessed with this thing and think that they can just tell me some bullshit story and I'll let them go deal with it? No. And she puts them back in their little prison cell, which is when Glitz reveals that this is, in fact, for sure, definitely Earth. Even though it's not where Earth is supposed to be. And while they're all in there discussing what they're going to do, the L7 bursts through the wall, which looks really cool.
Kool-Aid Man style. Kool-Aid Man style.
Cyberman style, too. The doctor's like, the robot's out for me. And they're like, well, why don't you just, I don't know, shake its hand or something. Get it to calm down. So he's like, hello, I'm the doctor. And shakes his hand. And like these cables shoot off of the robot. And
that looks pretty good, too.
Yeah, it's definitely like reverse footage or something.
Yeah.
And then like pull him up into a hug.
Him being stuck on it looks really funny.
Yeah.
So the robot leaves with the doctor tied up around it. Though in the next shot we see it looks more like he's carrying him. So at some point he had to like adjust his grip.
Yeah, that's so weird. It's like when they remounted the shot, they're like, how were you on the robot? He's like, I don't remember. Was I laying, you know, face up and him carrying me? That's got to be it.
Makes way more sense than you just sort of look like you're attached like a magnet.
So I think this is actually maybe the first time that Drathro realizes that there are people outside of the ship. Because he's just assumed they've all died. But this is like, the L7 has footage. He's like, oh, there are actually people up here. They're outside the ship. It is illegal to be outside the ship, so they must all be outlaws. And they all must die.
That's pretty much how the law works.
This is the scene also where the doctor is like, wait a second, I'm not in this scene. Why are we watching this?
I like, too, that he's like, because presumably the conceit is that, like, they got it all from his memory.
No, it's from the TARDIS.
From the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And so they're like, actually, the TARDIS is secretly recording everyone all the time.
And he's like, I had an older version, older model. What, you upgraded it? Are you telling me you've bugged me? And they're like, bugged? Like, it's an Earth term. I think he learned it from Perry.
I was going to say, because Perry used it, and he had the exact same reaction.
It's either bugged or zapped.
It was zapped.
Zapped. Oh. Similar, though.
Yeah, apparently the TARDIS is, like, low-key recording the thoughts, feelings, and opinions of everyone within a certain radius of it. That's not messed up.
No, not at all. No.
That has some terrifying implications, but it is also just a justification to have this episode make sense.
Mind a little bit of lampshading, but if somebody ever wanted to like write something exploring the ethics of how messed up that is, I would definitely read it.
I'm sure it exists somewhere, but be it Big Finish or fan fiction. So Katrika and her men are chasing after the robot, and they've got all these guns that they've stolen, and they shoot the robot, who is still holding the doctor. And Glitz and Dibber are both very, like, nonchalant about this. They're like, oh, well, you know, they come and they go. And Perry's like, my friend here is dying. This is the second time, like, the doctor has died in front of her. And there's been somebody else who's like,
You're right!
It just keeps happening.
People just really keep invalidating Perry in general.
I think Katrika thinks that this L7 is the immortal.
Yeah.
But it's not. So she's like, well, we've killed the immortal. Let's go storm the castle. That's ours now. So they all rush in. Dibber goes to get some stashed weapons. Perry shakes the doctor a little bit. He's fine. He wakes up, but he does an impression of the third doctor. He calls Perry Sarah Jane as well.
She does kind of look like Sarah Jane. The way she her hair is done in the serial, like, I think you had said something about it before the doctor called her Sarah Jane. And I was like, maybe that was intentional.
Maybe. He says, my head hurts abominably, Sarah Jane. He's doing an impression. It's all right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, he only says one line, so.
Right.
Hard to get a firm grasp on how good he did. But Katrika's people are invading the castle, and there is an added-in scene. I read that this was, like, added later because they were running short on time. Like, they were short. So they added in a scene of where they all get lost. Because he's like, it's this way. And he's like, no, it's not this way. And she's like, we have to decide, where are we going? And they both point in different directions and go, this way. And then that's when she's like, I'm the leader and we always move forward. Forward! And then they charge. So apparently that was just added in. But I liked it because it's funny. The doctor's like, we got to go. I have to shut the system down and shut Drathro down or everything will explode. So we got to get in there. As they're like preparing to do this, there is a hilarious scene. I don't remember exactly remember the setup for it. But like there's something about like Glitz not being mistaken for a philanthropist. And then like this is the dialogue. I've just copy pasted it because I like it so much. Glitz says, don't I look like a philanthropist? And Dibber says, well, how do I know? I've never seen one. And Glitz says, a philanthropist, my son, is someone who gives away all their grotzits out of the simple goodness of their heart. And Dibber says, oh, you mean they're stupid? Oh, yeah, you probably do look like one then.
That is some of the best dialogue ever.
It is. I love it so much. just insulting him right to his face.
Right.
They have a bit of a discussion about getting some stuff from, and then their dialogue is censored. It sounds like they say, I mean, I've practiced a long time to make that noise, so I gotta do it more than once.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the Matrix, right? They got it from the Time Lords, right?
I feel like that's the only thing that makes sense, because they're like, why has this been censored? And he's like, reasons. Like, it's not, it can't be told in this. I feel like it's got to be something Gallifrey related, at least.
Yeah.
Well, they do say, like, it's the biggest repository of all knowledge or something like that. Which sounds like the Matrix. So, the Doctor gets inside the underground and comes across Merdine. And Merdine presumably shoots him with a little gun. That's the cliffhanger. We know this. That didn't happen. Because again, we've seen the Doctor in the future. It'd be really wild if, like, they just killed the Doctor and then the Doctor's watching this like, hold on a second. Wait a second.
I don't think that happened.
Am I dead? I don't remember that happened. Because there, you know what? There is that bit at the beginning where he's like, wait a second, what happened to Perry? He has a little bit of amnesia. He's like, I don't remember what happened to Perry.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it would be interesting if they're like showing him this and he's like, I don't remember this happening. And then you see him die and he's like, hold on a second. Has this happened yet? That would be pretty fun to do. They don't do that. At least not in this serial. That's the end of episode 3. We are now into episode 4, which I have called Value Judgment. Merdine didn't shoot the Doctor. He shot Grail, who was trying to shoot the Doctor. And then he feels really bad about it. Because he's like, I know this guy. We hung out all the time, and it's really sad.
But that little cliffhanger, that's another kind of throwback to Mind of Evil. Because they pulled that same kind of visual stunt, you know, in one of the cliffhangers in that one, too. I think like episode 5, where the close-up of the gun and it fires. And then you come back next week to find out, no, that's not exactly what happened.
Like, all these cliffhangers are starting to get very repetitive, especially considering I'm watching all of these old comic book serials.
I'm right.
And you're like, they cheat so much in the comic book serials, more so than they do on Doctor Who. Like, I saw one in this that terrible Hop Harrigan, a plane flies into a mountain, and you see it hit the mountain and spin out. And then in the next chapter, it just doesn't hit the mountain, and then it lands fine.
It's like, wait a minute. That's not how that's supposed to work.
It infuriates me. Like, I don't mind a little bit of recontextualizing. Like, you see a car crash. Then in the next one, you see, oh, they jumped out of the car before the car crashed. That's fine. We just didn't see that scene. But I saw a plane hit a mountain.
Right. If you see a car crash at the end of one episode and the next episode they're actually riding a horse, that's not going to work.
I don't know. That'd be kind of amazing. Oh, man. Now that kind of makes me want to make, like, a serial and do that. Like, have the hangers and then just, like, the next episode.
Twist
like,
them in the best way.
Just twist them in the weirdest way possible. Yeah. I'm going to cut that out so no one steals my idea.
Smart move.
Meanwhile, the blondes have been like, things seem to be going really poorly. We got to get out of here. And Katrika runs through into the, I guess, Drathro's main room. As her and her villagers come in, the blondes slip out. She's like, oh, shit. Didn't know you'd be here. I thought we killed you.
I thought you were dead.
All robots look alike to me. Drathro grabs her and starts electrocuting her. And then Broken Tooth grabs her trying to save her. And he also gets electrocuted. And their faces get all bloody and gross looking. Looks like blood veins just all over their face. And then they collapse and die.
Gross.
It's a pretty cool effect.
And he's very annoyed that he had to use some of his energy to take care of these people. The Doctor bumps into Tumker and Handrail. And it's like, what's up? And then they're like, we're getting out of here. And he's like, well, let's go. And like they're getting out. And he's like, we got to take care of this thing before everything explodes. So let's run. And then he just sort of jogs off. And then it cuts to the Doctor watching this and goes like, now, it doesn't look like I'm actually hurrying there, does it? But my gait is very surprising. I can actually move pretty fast, even though it looks like I'm doing a pleasant stroll. And the Inquisitor is like, no one is here to talk about your athletic prowess. And he's like, no? Well, you can if you want to. Any compliments are gratefully accepted. I love Colin Baker so much. I was afraid I wasn't going to like him, and his first season did a lot to make it hard to like him.
Yes, agreed.
But I think it's more the writing than him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Doctor gets another speech. Is this the other speech you were talking about, maybe?
The exchange between him and Drathro?
Well, no, I was actually talking about, like, he gets very passionate about, and the trial. He's just like, this is an outrage, and he just
You're right. So three good moments in this story.
It's just like, this is an outrage and it's pointless and what are we doing? And just gets very animated and very passionate. And I always like when the Doctor gets a little bit passionate.
Yeah, I do love that scene a lot.
Glitz basically says that there were these people that broke into the... They're called the Sleepers. I guess they were like cryogenically frozen or something. It's been mentioned off and on, and like, that's what they're here after, is like, they were here and they have whatever it is they're looking for, this information. Was it like the underground is like a ship that crashed or something, or what's the deal? Like, there was people there and then it got sealed off because of the fireball, I guess.
I would say you'll see, but I can't promise that, so. I hate to tell you that, but...
I'm not entirely certain of the plot now that I'm reading it.
The sad thing is that they come back to this a little bit in the final story, and the complaint was, you know, how are we supposed to have kept up with all this, you know, sleeper Andromeda stuff when from the beginning of the season to the end of the season, there were all these mentions of it in the intermediate stories, but that was all the stuff that got cut out for time. So the sort of thread that runs through the season kind of got excised. So if you watch the Blu-ray and you watch all the extracts that are reattached to the episodes, it makes a bit more sense. Only a bit.
Interesting. So yeah, there's a thing with sleepers. I only vaguely understand it. Like, I think Drathro was supposed to be watching them, but I think they're pretty much dead.
So he's a bit of a creeper. He watches them sleep.
Creeper watches the sleeper. And they have information that...
Are we going to talk about Minecraft now? Now that we're talking about creepers?
Tony is just... gotten into Minecraft.
You talked more about Hop Harrigan than I've talked about Minecraft.
That's fair.
Fair point.
It is fair.
What do you want to talk about Minecraft?
I have chickens and I have cows and I have pigs and I found a waterfall and that's where I put my house, was behind the waterfall.
Ooh.
And so you could jump from the top of the cliff down into the waterfall and I'll take you straight into my house. Or you can keep going down the waterfall. That takes you to my farm. And then keep going past the farm. That takes you to the basement. I haven't done anything with that yet.
Wait, your basement is not under your house?
Well, it's just... it's the bottom of the waterfall. And I started to carve it out. But I haven't done anything but carve it out. If you go down the waterfall, it takes you straight into this little room. I haven't decided what I'm going to put there yet.
All right.
And that's what I'm doing in Minecraft. Thank you for listening.
I honestly thought that you were gonna take something from Minecraft and apply it to this story, but no.
No.
Oh, no. We're just going to talk about Minecraft now. You could say that's a sort of like, that's your idea for how the village that Katrika runs could be developed.
Sure.
I really just, creepers is a monster in Minecraft. So I was taking that as my end.
Right. Creepers to creepers.
Yeah.
Jeepers.
I've gotten killed by multiple creepers because I'm not good at the game. I just want to build things in peace.
You should make a TARDIS.
I could make a TARDIS. It'd be really easy.
Can you actually make it bigger on the inside?
No.
Well. Just put it at the base of like a mountain and then dig out inside of the mountain so it looks like...
Yeah, I can do that.
All right. Got this all figured out.
But dig out infinitely large.
And then put a library in it.
And a library and a swimming pool.
I can do that. I can do all that. You can make anything in Minecraft. It's amazing.
Can you make a living?
Wow.
Ouch. I mean, people do.
So, back to Doctor Who. The Doctor is brought to Drathro, and Drathro orders Mardine to cull all the organics, such as humans and whatnot. And because he's like, kill all these people, the Doctor tries to explain the value of human life to a robot. And he does not do a great job of it.
This is my other favorite Colin Baker scene, where he goes on this passionate diatribe about the meaning of life. Oh, I think it's absolutely wonderful.
It's very good. It's not very effective, though.
Well, no, but that's because you're talking to a machine who thinks like a machine.
It is a very good speech, though, and everything he says is very good. Meanwhile, Perry and the other people are going to trying to figure out how to get somewhere in there where the Doctor is, because the doors are closed, and they're going to go through the ration chutes. Glitz and Dipper have some guns. They're going to blast their way into it. And Glitz says, 5 rounds rapid. That should do it.
That seemed like it hurt you. When we were watching it, you said, you're not allowed to say that.
I know. Exactly.
That's a brigadier. talking about referencing previous serials, but they join in. They're all in the ration chutes. Drathro sees them sneaking in on a camera and thinks that the doctor's trying to pull some stuff. So he activates a couple of fans and these very cheap looking lasers to sort of attack them. And Dibber just shoots something that deactivates them and also causes Balazar to be covered Nickelodeon style in green goop.
Yeah, it's not great.
Some food. From this point on, the cereal just really starts shitting on Balazar. But they all get in there. They're all in there with Drathro. And the doctor's been passionately, you know, trying to get this robot to realize that people are people and don't need to be murdered. And then Glitz and Dibber just are like, oh, you want some black light? We got plenty of black light out on the ship. It's just a little walk from here.
And that fucking works.
It works. Like, we'll take you to Andromeda. That's where you're going or whatever. We'll take you there. You know what, though? You don't want to leave those secrets. So grab those and we'll all head out. And Trathro's like, yeah, this sounds like a great idea. And he packs his little bag, which has the secrets in it. It's this little diamond-shaped, like, briefcase or whatever.
Just luggage.
It's a film canister that actually has copies of the Daleks' master plan on it.
Oh, boy. Knowing what happens to those secrets, that's even sadder.
That's true.
So to make this all look legit and stuff, Glitz and Dibber tie up everybody, the Doctor and Perry and not Balazar. Maybe it is Balazar. I think it is Balazar. They all get tied up, but very loosely. So as soon as Glitz, Dibber, and Drathro leave the area, they bust out of their restraints. And they just start pressing a bunch of buttons and flipping switches. And the doctor's like, it may be too late.
Style. Right. The fastest temp in Chiswick.
And the doctor's pushing down these things. And he's like, it's probably too late to stop the explosion, but I can probably contain it. Tells everybody to get out of there, and then he does as much as he can and gets out as it lightly explodes.
Just a little explosion.
It knocks Balazar to the ground, though. And then Drathro falls down, and red lights all over his body fluctuate. They go and he burns up and also burns the case full of secrets. Glitz and Dibber are a little bummed about this, but I think it's the remnants of the antenna that they find that are like, oh, this is like some rare metal shit. So we're still coming out ahead. And they get out of there. The blondes also get out of there, and it's the first time that they get some fresh air for the first time. I don't think they've ever been outside of this underground.
They have not. And then they look at each other and see each other for the first time.
As twins?
There is a deleted scene. They mention how good this is, and he's like, yeah, I agree. And they're like, I think that's the first time we've ever agreed on something. And they run out to romp and play in the sunshine. Then everybody's like, sort of meets up, and then Balazar is like, the end, like the prophecy foretold or whatever. And the doctor's like, it's not the end, it's the beginning. Everything's going to be great now. Forge your new life. And Balazar's like, maybe I'll see the Canadian goose. Then the doctor wipes some of the goop off of Balazar, licks it, and then goes, looks like dinner's on him.
Awful. Rude.
He even laughs at his own joke. I love it.
I would laugh at that joke if I made it.
They should put him on trial just for that. Guilty.
And then they leave and they're like, there's definitely some plot threads left hanging. I wonder what that's all about. Like, why is this planet here?
It's nice that they spell that out for the viewer. There's still things here that we haven't quite seen resolved yet.
These aren't plot holes.
We'll get to them. We're going to
be working on them all season.
And then later they might be plot holes.
They very well might be.
Then it cuts back to the trial. The doctor attempts to defend himself a little bit more. And then the Valyard says, I'm going to get you. And it zooms in on Colin Baker's face. It's the exact same cliffhanger as episode one, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's the end of this episode and the end of The Mysterious Planet.
Nice.
Yeah.
Woo!
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back for final thoughts.
Welcome to Dr. Geek's Laboratory.
Hello, everyone.
Dr. Geek here with a shout-out to all the scientists who worked tirelessly to bring a COVID-19 vaccine into reality. Let's face it, creating something of this magnitude is a miracle worthy of Dr. McCoy himself. And now, Dr. Geek needs you to do your part. Remember, each shot is one small step back to normal, one giant leap to putting the pandemic behind us. We can do this. For more information, visit vaccines.gov to find your nearest provider.
I'm Lifelong Ensign Charles Kelso.
I'm Federation Envoy Keith Johnson.
I'm Ferengi Counselor Veronica Dashiell.
And I'm Andorian Mess Hall Cook R. Alan Seiler.
And we're the crew of Earth Station Trek. Join us for
episode reviews,
discussions of themes and characters,
and all the news from across the Trekverse.
Our logs cover the full gamut of Star Trek.
From the groundbreaking original series
to the future of the franchise on Paramount Plus,
with lots of stops in between.
Join our crew aboard Earth Station Trek for your regular podcast escape into the Trekverse.
Go bald or go home!
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
Yeah, I want to substitute my bit for hearing you say antenna one more time.
Antenna? Antenna?
There it was.
I'm from the South. Leave me alone.
It's time for final thoughts.
This is my absolute favorite Colin Baker story. It's fun from start to finish. I think that it's Colin's, by far, best performance in the show. I think the script is amazing. It's got some of the best dialogue in the whole Sixth Doctor period. I like the whole season, actually. I really do. And a lot of people kind of dog on it. It's kind of interesting, though, that playing Classic Who as like a streaming thing started on Twitch a few years ago. And then there's a Pluto TV channel. And then the Blu-rays start coming out. And I think that this story, or this season, really, really works in the streaming, binging television, you know, the environment that we live in now. I've seen on a lot of Doctor Who, like, forums and stuff that new people discover it. I think they have a very different opinion of it than maybe the original viewers did in 86. Because people weren't used to watching that kind of thing in 86. But now it's like, oh my gosh, I just binged the entire Trial of a Time Lord and I loved it. So I think that's really good. And here's a little side note that I probably should have mentioned at the beginning. The season is structured to where the three stories that are presented as evidence come from the Doctor's past, present, and future. So it's sort of a Christmas Carol kind of structure. I don't know if this is actually true, but there was rumor at the time that the first story was going to use, in, you know, since it's from the Doctor's past, they were going to use all the footage that they had shot for Shada as this is the evidence that we're presenting against the Doctor. And so the bits that are missing would be explained away as like glitches in the Matrix and would be explained by, you know, the courtroom scenes, which I thought would have been really neat. But I'm glad I like the way that it turned out, because I do think it's such a good opening story for a season. I really absolutely love it. I love the new dimension in the Doctor and Perry's relationship. I love all the side characters. It is by far my favorite Colin Baker story.
So far, I'd have to say that's true of me as well. This was a really good serial. It's nice to watch Perry and the Doctor enjoy each other's company and have fun. It's nice to have not just one, but two different comedic duos. There are two robots in it.
Two really good robots.
Two really good robots. There's like a cavewoman leader person who's very cool. It was just super fun to watch.
It's another good Robert Holmes story. I enjoyed it a lot too. I don't know if it's necessarily my favorite. I still super like Vengeance on Varos for that amazing cliffhanger. But much like Vengeance on Varos, I love the meta-ness of it. The trial stuff. I just like the idea of Doctor Who talking about Doctor Who. I think that's really clever and really interesting. And yeah, it's fun. The Colin Baker is having fun. Him and Perry, their relationship's so much better now. I'm very excited about that. And I always enjoy when Doctor Who gets a little ambitious, because sometimes it's hit and miss, but like it's always fun that they try something.
Right.
And this is definitely a hit. We'll see how it goes from here.
I don't think we really mentioned it too much during our review of the story, but I'm really impressed with the way that Perry comes across in this story.
Mm.
She's a much stronger character. She's much more self-reliant. She's not simpering in the corner, and she's not like stammering, you know, because she's nervous or afraid or anything. I really, and of course she dresses like an adult. So I think they're trying to show that she's really grown a lot in the interim between the last season and this one. And I really, really love her in this story a lot.
Yeah, fantastic. It never looked like she was about to cry.
Right.
Not once,
exactly.
The whole time.
I've heard they don't necessarily keep that up with Perry. I'm not sure.
Oh, well, no. There's only, you'll see.
We'll see.
You'll see. There's some good stuff in the next story.
But I'm excited. I'm excited like that we have a season arc going on. And that's very cool to me. But before we go, is there anything that you would like to plug?
I was going to make a rude comment. I shan't. let's see. I've got my publishing company, which is Cosmic Press, which is K-O-Z-M-I-C Press. You can find that at cosmicpress.com. You can find it on Facebook. You can find it on Twitter. And you could find it on Instagram, but I don't do anything with it. So, you know, there's no point in doing that. I've got my Sunday evening YouTube show, sort of a music talk show that I've been doing for a couple of months now. And you can find that on YouTube. It's Alan's Music Room, and on my Facebook page. And as we mentioned earlier, my Star Trek podcast, which is Earth Station Trek, which you can find on Podbean and Spotify and all the other places that you find great podcasts, like the one on which I am currently appearing. our episodes come out every Monday, and we have a great time with it. Find us on Facebook and join our Facebook group.
Nice. Anything you want to plug?
Keep watching The Unseen World on watch.itsrealgoodtv.com, please.
Specifically, you should watch the Wizard of Oz episode.
Yeah.
Very specifically that one, yes.
There's somebody in it that's in this
Is
podcast.
Is it me?
It's you!
Oh my gosh!
You're one of the interviewees.
That turned out pretty good.
I gotta tell you. Oh, thank you. I was surprised at how much of my footage got in the episode, to the point where even I was like, oh my god, does this guy ever shut up?
I enjoyed it.
But it was a really good episode. It really turned out well.
Because you had been there when you were a kid, right? And when you were an adult.
Yeah, when I was like 7-ish, I guess. I had family that lived in the upper part of North Carolina. And so I guess like when I was 7 or so, we went up the mountain and saw, back when it was an active, you know, attraction, touristy kind of thing that people went to before the big fire, and it got abandoned and turned into a scary ghost town and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, so it was kind of neat going back 50 years later.
And that wow. bus ride was terrifying, though.
It was
just tree branches, like, whipping the side of the bus, like, coming into the windows, and you're like, oh God, okay.
But not as terrifying as actually driving a car up the mountain roads to get to the place.
No.
Holy smokes, that was scary.
I am from Missouri, where we have plains. I don't understand why people try to live on mountains.
Thank you.
It doesn't make sense to me.
I don't have much to plug. I just check out thedip.com. That's D-I-P-P. I'm writing a bunch of articles. Some of them are about Doctor Who. Most of them are about me watching way too many comic book serials. I might have a new one out by the time this goes up, in which it's about how Loki is the best Doctor Who show on television right now.
I mean, if Doctor Who's not going to bother doing anything, other shows need to pick up the slack.
Loki's doing it. It's really good. But other than that, if you liked this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on WatchYourAssalon.com. And you can also find our podcast, our Patreon, our Amazon wish list, and more at linktree.com/watchathon. That's linktr.ee. There's a dot in the middle of tree. Linktree.com/watchathon. Also, let's say again, special thanks to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
Thanks, Matt. You're awesome.
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net. I also want to give a special shout out to Vincent E.L. for providing us with our amazing theme song.
Thanks, Vince.
Check out more of their music at soundcloud.com/VincentEL or VincentEL.bandcamp.com. Tune in next time when we continue talking about The Trial of a Time Lord. This time, part 2, Mind Warp, with returning guest Felicity Cousinitz. Tune back in that. And also, we may have a surprise at the end of this season. We're going to try to get all of the guests for these episodes are going to come back for the last one. Hopefully, if we can schedule it all out. It's going to be open to any previous guest, but yeah, so hopefully we can get everybody back. So until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Bye, y'all.
Oh, my head hurts abominably, Sarah Jane.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.